This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
Readers.com is your one-stop shop for quality reading glasses with over 700 styles under $20. Readers.com offers bifocal readers, reading sunglasses, computer readers, and more with powers from 1.0 to 6.0. With free shipping on orders over $30, friendly customer service, and easy returns, you are sure to find your perfect pair. Enter the coupon code BUCK at checkout for 30% off your next order. That's Readers.com. Happy eyes, happy wallet.
The Buck Sexton Show.
Joined now by Ambassador Lincoln Bloomfield. He is chairman of the Stimson Center, which is a nonpartisan security think tank in D.C. Previously, he was a presidential special envoy leading U.S. efforts to protect international aviation from shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles. Ambassador, thank you for joining.
My pleasure, Buck. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Now, look, I know that no one's raising. I just wanted to ask you based on the headlines, and then we'll get into some stuff about the Iran deal. There's no suggestion yet at all that the shoulder fired missile has anything to do with the Egypt airplane. But I'm just wondering, what's your sense from the headlines of the likeliest scenario, given what we know at this point for that Egypt Airlines flight?
What I've heard is just from the aircraft experts. This was at 37,000 feet, so well above a shoulder-fired missile range, which might be 10,000 or a little bit above. So either there was an explosion on board, or there was some malfunction on board, or it's possible that the pilot and the co-pilot, as happened in some previous incident, a Malaysian airliner, tried to do different things and got the plane too high and it lost its ability to stay up there. I don't know. I'm not the
expert. Still a lot of possibilities. Yeah, no, I know it's not a shoulder fired missile, but I just figured I'd ask you what you thought about the likelihood of whether this was terrorism or not. So now we can get on to the Iran deal, which, as I understand it, you have some concerns that this whole thing could unravel. Please explain.
Well, it's a little different than that. I watched the Iran negotiation kind of from the sidelines and wondered what was going on. Why were they taking so long? Who's holding up the deal? Is somebody not offering enough? Is somebody refusing to do something? And even when I went to private meetings and asked government folks what's going on, they couldn't answer who the holdup was. They would come out and do a 6-month extension, and the Iranian foreign minister would be smiling, and the U.S. would be smiling and very happy to be there, and then nothing would have been agreed. And so you look at the deal at the end of the day, and I agree with those who say it looked like we were never going to walk. We were going to stay in the room until we got something. And so they got a lot of concessions at the end that that we had indicated we wouldn't give up at the beginning. And I my own view is that the regime in Iran came to the table not just because of economics or sanctions. I don't think they really care if the Iranian people get rich or not, or get what they get economic benefit. I think it's more about staying in power. And what we did was sit on our hand for 2 years while they went into Syria to keep Bashar al-Assad in power, and went into Iraq and made it hard for al-Abadi to put together keep the state unified and have a functioning constitutional republic, even though a very flawed one. They really kind of stirred things up. And ISIS came in both countries, and I think that Bashar al-Assad and the Iranians welcomed it at first because it was diversion. We were going to get rid of Assad, and then we got diverted. And so I think that all of these things tell me that the U.S. in Washington has not had its eye on the real strategic center of what's happening and why it's happening. And I am trying to put this into focus, and I hope to publish something that would explain in depth what this regime is all about.
How fair do you think is the criticism of the Obama administration that many have leveled, and I'll be upfront and say that I've certainly made it many times, and it's a question of degree I'm asking about here, that they were willing to largely ignore and push aside a lot of other foreign policy issues, concerns, and interests in the Middle East because of the desire to get this Iran deal done? I mean, it was this... Do you think that this was the main motivator for almost all of the administration's second term foreign policy? I mean, where would you categorize it?
I think that's a fair description, that they were willing to overlook almost anything with Iran to get a deal. And they saw this as historic. No one had had any kind of real discussion of this level with the Iranians for 36, 37 years. There's a reason for that, because I don't think previous presidents would have gone as far on the same terms. When President Obama went to the UN in 2013 and he said, you know, we're going to start negotiations, and it was all about trying to open a door to a better relationship and a deeper understanding and something based on mutual interests and mutual respect. That's what he said. And of course, that has not happened. The deal didn't change Iran's behavior. They've been shooting missiles. They've been even Zarif, the most friendly faces who speak English and are very write articles in the Washington Post, have basically told Secretary of State Kerry, don't complain. And there's a lot more behind that, but they never were going to change. And I don't think we understood what was behind Iran coming to the table in the first place. I think it was about trying to get their oar in the water and kind of prevent unhappiness at home from overthrowing the regime. I really do think that after 2009, there were people in the streets. They shot that 29-year-old woman on camera, and they arrested a lot of people. And there's a lot of pent-up unhappiness. Some of it's mild. Some of it runs pretty deep, and nobody really knows. But I think that's what they're afraid of, and that's why they came out of their shell.
Yeah, this is something that has been, it seems to me at least, has been shelved for years now. I mean, not only has the administration, of course, and we seem to agree on this point, not really, they've sort of stepped back from issues in the Middle East that could agitate Iran that's outside of Iranian borders, right? So Iranian support for the Assad regime in Syria and Iranian support for Hezbollah and other Shia actors, bad actors across the Middle East. And, of course, it's virtual colonization of parts of Iraq that's underway right now. With all of that going on, though, we don't really ever hear anymore, and haven't from this administration, certainly, about regime change. I mean, I could even think back to the George Clooney movie Syriana, and they were sort of that there was a bit of cynicism with the Committee for the Liberation of Iran. I don't know if you've seen the movie Ambassador, but it was something that, oh, of course, you know, we're going to get regime change in Iran, like that's ever going to happen. But at least it was being talked about. That doesn't even seem to be discussed anymore. You mentioned 2009, the Obama administration sat on its hands while there was violence and crackdown in the streets, and the besieged were beating people and throwing people in prison cells left and right. Is there any hope for a different Iran coming from inside, or is the position of the mullahs right now stronger than it's been in many years?
Well, that's a great question, and that's the one that we should be debating in Washington, and we're not debating, and that's sort of what I'm trying to write about, so we can start that conversation, Buck. I personally think you can make a pretty good case that the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei's influence is in retreat. He's supposed to be the religious leader of the Shia from Iran to Karbala to Quds, which is Jerusalem. He's supposed to be the big guy. But even large Shia religious figures like Sistani in Iraq don't follow him. And he's much weaker than Ayatollah Khomeini. And he's getting on in years. And he was never a religious scholar of any note. He was two levels below Grand Ayatollah. And the one who was in line got pushed aside because he was complaining about human rights violations, and Khomeini wasn't going to have any of it, so he pushed him out of the way. So I think that's a great question. Is Iran acting out of strength or weakness? The business about regime change, as you know, regime change is a loaded term in Washington now. People saw what the Bush administration did. I was part of the Bush administration. I know that I'm not a neoconservative myself, but I know them all. They're all colleagues of mine, longstanding. So I see what happened. President Obama and the Democratic Party made it kind of a dirty word that you're going to overthrow regimes, and that's now considered to be discredited. I actually think in the 21st century, Buck, that what's more powerful than even sending in, you know, the third MEF and the third ID is information. So what I'm trying to do, and a lot of folks are trying to do, is call them out on where their money's going, on what they're really doing to kill Arab Muslims in Syria and Iraq, how they're splitting up these countries instead of trying to help them unify and find their own way, how they're hanging three people a day on average. The executions have gone up under Rouhani. And there, he's even got a video now of sending children to the theater in Syria, which, remember when they had kids crossing the minefields ahead of the forces in the Iran-Iraq war. This is not moderation, it's not reform, and it may not even be America's business, but we could certainly help the Iranian people around the world tell the story and push, hold a mirror up to these folks in Tehran and say, explain yourself. What exactly do you stand for?
You mentioned the neoconservatives, the Bush administration, and you're absolutely right that from the Obama point of view, the notion of using any U.S. military force or quite honestly any U.S. influence to try to overturn a Middle East regime, with the exception of Libya, by the way, but it sure became something that they were very loath to get involved in, and certainly in the case of Syria, they've tried to do the bare minimum and just stay out of it. But what I would be curious to get your sense of is, you know, we were sort of told in Egypt, for example, that wasn't us, that was the Egyptians, right? They rose up and then they got rid of Mubarak, and eventually the Muslim Brotherhood was in power there, and we said, well, maybe this isn't really such a good thing. We see what's happening now in Syria, another revolution from within that hasn't ended yet, obviously, but doesn't seem like it would empower moderate elements. I think we could all agree that would seem unlikely at this point in time, even if the Assad regime were, let's say, in 12 months or whatever to fall. In Iran, the impression we always get is that if it wasn't for the sort of sclerotic theocracy full of all these mullahs and these guys, as you say, they're aging, they're losing power. If it wasn't for them, we've got a well-educated, pro-Western Iranian youth that just want to, like, listen to pop music, drive BMWs, and everything's going to be fine. Is that a little too rosy, given what we've seen in other Middle Eastern countries, when actually the dictatorial regime in one form or another falls, and sometimes the people turn out to be pretty religious themselves, actually? What do you think?
that's a great question, and I won't dispute that what you would find if you pulled the top level off of Iran is a people who've been listening to controlled information for 37 years and has blamed the West for all their troubles. Wouldn't you, if you were a dictator, you'd find someone else to blame? And so, yeah, you listen to that for long enough, and much of that generation is young, so they do have access to the internet, which is interrupted and it's censored and it's monitored, but they do see, they have satellite TV, but once in a while the satellite dishes get ripped off the roofs and crushed by tanks. So, I mean, they know what's going on the outside, and they want to be part of that. But the political image of the West is negative. And that's one reason why I don't know that I would advocate Washington saying, hey, we're going to overthrow that regime, because that immediately gives them a storyline that we're the enemy, and that helps them mobilize the people. I'd much rather sort of point out and help them point out and give them a voice to say, you know, well, you just got $150 billion. Why are you giving it to a secular Alawite in Damascus? And, you know, Hezbollah, a bunch of Lebanese Arabs, when we're Persians, you know, what about our schools? What about our clinics? What about our roads? What about give us something. And I think that if you could really stir it up just by telling the truth and showing what these guys are doing, including the sons and daughters, by the way, of the elite in Iran. There was a one-day set of pictures that went up called the Rich Kids of Tehran. It was pulled down immediately, but it stuck in the web. And it looked just like parties in Malibu. They weren't wearing head covers. They were wearing, you know, designer dresses and glasses of wine and pools and Lamborghinis and Rolexes, you know, just what you want, the worst case for the mullahs. So there's a lot of hypocrisy there. If you think that the 1% in America is controversial, make it 0.1% in Iran, and it's even more controversial. So I think, look, they'll find their way forward. They may not love America, but once they get exposed to the West, they'll realize that we don't hate them.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, right now what's going on in Venezuela. You have the state of the emergency, and of course there's the government constantly reinforcing that, well, it's a Yankee coup, you know, the Americans, that the CIA is going to do something. And as I'm fond of saying, across the board, as somebody used to work at Langley, if only the CIA were as Machiavellian as enemy regimes pretend to think we actually are. they know we're not actually even that good, but it's always fun for them to say that, oh, no, it's some sort of American-backed coup that's coming our way. And that can be very useful for propaganda purposes inside these countries. As you point out, it's useful in Iran. It's been useful in the case of Venezuela for sure for years, whether it's the CIA or anybody else, any other foreign intelligence agency that they're going to blame for some impending coup that never actually comes. But we'll have to see how this shakes out in Iran with the next administration. Ambassador, we've run long on time, but I really appreciate you joining. Ambassador Lincoln Bloomfield, anywhere you want to direct people for your writing or social media, anything at all?
I have a Twitter account called LB Junior, at LB Junior. It has very few followers, but whenever I publish something, it goes up there.
All right. Well, after today, there are going to be some more followers. So thank you very much, Ambassador, for joining. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Buck. All the best.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing. Call right now, and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website, powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-215-0465. That's 800-215-0465.